Breaking news, President Trump set to deliver remarks on a new vaccine and the developments there. We'll talk about it today and the Flynn case on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
And welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We are waiting for the President of the United States to make remarks from the Rose Garden, so from the White House, about development of a new vaccine. As soon as the President delivers those remarks, and if that occurs while we're on the air, it's supposed to happen around now, but you know, things shift around, we will cover it, though, because this would be a huge development, obviously, depending on what this announcement is. Is it a timeline? Is it a breakthrough? Is it both? And kind of he mentioned yesterday, you know, that the military would help distribute a vaccine. And I think, you know, there's legal issues there. But, you know, who's going to really oppose the issue? Because travel's not the same right now. Flying things around right now, delivering goods is not the same thing right now, and the military has the capability to do that. So it's not like a military takeover. It's a military using their transportation and delivery capabilities. I want to go right to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Than, this was something, again, all we kind of – you wouldn't have necessarily taken from the president's remarks about the military delivering yesterday. That's making a little bit more sense now that we know he's holding this special I guess he's calling it remarks, not a press conference, but he's making remarks on this. So he's not just going to be taking questions, not like a normal press conference. This was something special and unique, and it could mean very good things for the country if there has been some kind of breakthrough on a vaccine, because ultimately all the reopening and the full, I mean, I'm talking about full reopening where we're not talking about masks and we're not talking about 50% capacity. We're talking about putting people back in arenas again, being able to go and schools reopening, and it kind of puts those debates and questions, makes them a lot easier when there's a vaccine that works. This would be huge news for the country economically and also just for all of us. I mean, just for people who have got kids at home and schools that are trying to figure out, maybe, you know, I don't know, again, the timeline yet. We don't know that. But even if it was a little later than school usually started, or a few months later even, you could kind of plan things around it then.
Yeah, Jordan, it'd be incredible news if there's been a breakthrough or progress made on that front. But, you know, honestly, regardless of where they are on a breakthrough, I think this is appropriate timing for the president, because the development and the deployment of a vaccine is, of course, going to be one of the pivotal factors in when we do get fully open again. And, Jordan, I think it comes at a good time, because you see many parts of the country starting this reopening, a lot of cases declining, and I would say the vast majority of the country, all good signs. Then you've got places like where I live. I mean, I live in one of the places where cases are still on the rise, and they're still building these mobile hospital units. So the focus on a vaccine, Jordan, I think rushes along, speeds along the process when the entire country is fully open again. I think there's a vast portions, though, Jordan, that are going to be able to move forward rather quickly, even in spite of that. But I look forward to what the president has to say. And I'll tell you this, at the bare minimum, I'm glad this is where he's focusing, because I think that focus can be a big factor in moving that vaccine along.
Yeah, exactly. And folks, again, so we're going to wait when the president does deliver his remarks. If that occurs while we're on the air, we'll bring those to you, because this is a very important news for everyone in the entire country. It doesn't matter what your politics are, what your personal beliefs are. This is about 100% getting back the country to work, as everybody said, you need a vaccine to do it. And if that's what it will take, then I think we're going to find out a lot more, because the president said he's going to give remarks on the vaccine and developments that have occurred. This was an unplanned conference. We're also going to get into the General Flynn matter. We walked back through a lot of this yesterday on the broadcast. But I think there's a lot to get into with the ACLJ's work, how that's tied into. We're going to bring in Andy Economou as well. 1-800-684-3110. Take your questions on General Flynn. Take your questions about what the vaccine would mean, maybe for your business, for your small business, for your company you work for. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back on the air.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
I will tell you, in the last 24 hours, and we are waiting to see the president's remarks, got remarks about a development of a new vaccine. I'm assuming that's related to COVID-19, the coronavirus. And again, I know through our comments in Facebook, there's people saying, because I mentioned the military was, it was not about the military necessarily distributing this, like giving you the vaccine. It was having the military help distribute the vaccine. And that's a lot of that's because, do you hear as many planes flying overhead anymore? Do you see as many flights from your airport? Do you see the same kind of transportation? Not right now. That may be different by the time this vaccine is available and you won't need the military to use it, but it's not about the military knocking down your door saying you got to do this or else, and this is not the case. So, again, let's wait and hear what the president has to say before making judgments about the vaccine. Those are just for our Facebook comments. See, we are paying attention to all of you on Facebook. We watch closely. But I want to get into the Flynn matter because, you know, we were walking through yesterday a very substantive timeline that we've prepared at the ACLJ. I'm actually grabbing it now. This came from, and actually got people that were requesting this to me, so we are going to send this out to those who didn't get it. If you're a supporter of the ACLJ, you likely did, but this was one you may or may not still have. It's from 2019, the spring and summer of 2019. It's our FOIA report. And I want to go to Andy Economou. Andy, we put together this timeline, and I say we, Ben Sisney from our legal team, working with Aaron Gulbrayson from our radio and political team and government affairs team as well, and broadcast team, looking at what we had found in this FOIA, Andy, and kind of the how it matched up to the unmasking requests that were being made. Our FOIA, Andy, was primarily focused on this very late move by executive order to open up more signal intel to more individuals in the intelligence community and to allow them to see it. So when that occurred, we filed a FOIA request about why, and we got all this info. Now we're seeing all this info ties directly to the unmasking request of Michael Flynn. I mean, it was not an accident. It looks like this all occurred to target Flynn.
There's no doubt about that, Jordan. Suddenly we have people all the way from Joe Biden, who was vice president in his latter days there, and Jacob Lew, the Secretary of the Treasury, high-ranking, middle-ranking, low-ranking members of the intelligence community, all scrambling at the last minute, weeks before the new president is to come in, to unmask General Flynn. And the purpose of that is clearly was to embarrass the administration coming in, to discredit General Flynn, to try to make him look terrible in the eyes of the intelligence in the community generally, and to show that he was not the proper person to be the national security advisor because President Obama didn't like him from the beginning. So this was a way to discredit him by exposing him and unmasking him in fashions that were contrary to all the rules for unmasking and all the things that unmasking was really intended to do. It was an attempt to attack and not only to harass, but to humiliate and debase the character of this man.
Thad, I was tuning into some of the more liberal news networks this morning. I watched some of the Morning Joe. I just want to kind of see their reaction, how they're downplaying. I heard, we saw the tweet from Brennan, former CIA director in Obama, who was an unmasker, calling the president a despot because he was calling this Obamagate. We heard from people like Ben Rhodes playing this down, saying, oh, wow, intelligence officials asking for unmasking, like that's somehow illegal. But these weren't all intelligence officials. It also included like our ambassador to the UN multiple times. It also included the chief of staff to Vice President Biden, but Vice President Biden himself. Included President Obama's chief of staff the day the Oval Office meeting happened, when President Obama instructed DOJ, the Deputy Attorney General, on what was going on with Michael Flynn. So you got this spin going on from the left, saying there was nothing to see here. This is a made up scandal. And this is funny coming from a group that came up with the Russiagate issue, to me, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, it went all the way to the top, Jordan. And frankly, I think that's why the media coverage has vacillated from trying to ignore it to this point where the evidence gets so overwhelming that they have to address it. So they sort of pivot to the other side and try to cover it up. And, Jordan, I was reminded this morning of a couple of things. One, we know that Ambassador Power testified to the House Intelligence Committee that she allegedly had no recollection of this unmasking. I mean, Jordan, she made 7 unmasking requests of General Flynn alone, and she averaged 1 unmasking request per day in 2016. For her to not have any recollection of that, I think defies logic. And by the way, if that testimony was not correct, that would constitute perjury in front of the United States Congress. The other thing, Jordan, Ben Rhodes very infamously many times talked about how the White House had no idea, no even awareness of this investigation. Jordan, that is conclusively not true. I mean, I guess he can hold on to some figment of the imagination that Dennis McDonough made the unmasking request without President Obama's knowledge, although I don't believe that. But you cannot make the case that President Obama did not know about this. He was the one that brought it up in this January 5th meeting, the very date Dennis McDonough made that request. So, Jordan, I think the coverage of it, quite frankly, I think it's desperation.
Yeah, I mean, it sheds a lot of light, Andy, when you realize that the President of the United States, people are testifying under oath, was briefing people about what to do with Michael Flynn and what they were going to do with Michael Flynn and what was happening with Michael Flynn. And you have the President of the United States, who's usually the one being briefed. Even in their final days of office, they're supposed to be, one, wrapping up, paying attention to the, international matters of national security, but basically wrapping up their administration. And yet this was an administration ramping up its attempt. We now kind of see they were at the tip of the iceberg. I think they were the tip of the spear, Andy, into taking down the incoming president. And I saw this article yesterday about how this president won't be part of the president's club because he attacks the former presidents. Shouldn't President Obama be kicked out? I mean, he was obviously trying to undermine, for political purposes, his successor because he didn't like the outcome of how the American people voted.
I've said this from the very beginning, Jordan. You use a good analogy. He, instead of wrapping up, he was ramping up in 20 days, 15 days left before he left office. But I have said this from the very beginning. It is impossible that Barack Obama did not know what was going on among his intimates with respect to the attempt to discredit General Flynn, who he did not like, who he had removed from the position that he had put him in on the National Security Advisory Board, and who knew that he was going to be a key figure in the Trump administration and turned out to be the National Security Advisor at the beginning there, and they were determined to kill him. That's exactly what this was, and they all scrambled to do what the emperor's bidding was. Don't tell me that the chief of staff's request to unmask, okay, General Flynn, was not known by and directed by President Obama himself. I won't believe that under any circumstances.
You know, it's interesting to see. We've got even an older FOIA now, and we're going to get into this when we come back from the break. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. We are awaiting the president's remarks on this new vaccine. And again, I know we're getting a lot of phone calls, and we're not going to take them, folks. If you're just an anti-vaxxer to begin with, you know, and you're that. I mean, this is, again, this is bigger for the country about whatever the president's going to speak on, because regardless of you like your politicians, you don't like your politicians, there's a lot of them who are saying, you know, without a vaccine, we can't really fully open. That doesn't mean without everybody taking it. That just means without one available, we can't fully open. So, again, let's wait and see what the president has to say, folks. And we're getting into the Flynn matter. And I think we've got more FOIA information. So we went deeper into our FOIA work. And this was about Samantha Power specifically, Obama's UN ambassador. And she was like the top unmasker, I think, so far that we know of. She was putting in these requests. She made a pitch to 60 Minutes even about something. Now, that was fully redacted. We couldn't see what the pitch was. But we're going to go through this FOIA. We come back from the break, 1-800-684-3110 when you want to talk to us on air. Andy, as it stands legally right now, we have not seen further moves from Judge Sullivan on the question of, well, can other amicus get time here? Is it just going to be his retired judge friend who called for President Trump, you know, to be impeached and doesn't like the president to make this presentation? We don't know when that's going to occur. And we have not yet seen a move by DOJ, if there is a move to make appropriately to the circuit court, though. I know that that's been discussed a lot. People have asked about interlocutory appeals about this decision. They've asked about writs of mandamus. What's interesting, Andy, we've only got about 55 seconds left, but we still have not gotten more from the judge.
No, we've gotten an order, two orders from the judge, one in which he gave the impression that many amici were going to be allowed, including the Watergate crowd from the Nixon days, to come in and show why he should be prosecuted, that is General Flynn, and not be permitted to withdraw the plea. And then he says, no, that's not going to happen. It's just going to be my friend Judge Gleason, and he's going to come in and argue the case for the government, suddenly becoming a special prosecutor. So Judge Flynn has sent terribly conflicting signals out.
Folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We're awaiting the remarks from the president. We'll be talking about as well, again, the Flynn case and going through that new timeline. A new FOIA we unearthed, going back into our FOIA practice, sheds more light on this.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
So we are awaiting these remarks by the president. Don't know how many times I'll say that while we're live on the air today, but we are awaiting that, and we will go to it live because I think it's important for the country. Anytime the president holds one of these briefings for the country, if you will, that's unscheduled, you know it's going to be important news. And we know it's likely related to we know it's about a vaccine, so it's related to the coronavirus. But I do want to get into this. So we've gone deeper. So in June of 2019, in another FOIA, it's an older FOIA request that we put in. We had to go to court over with the State Department NSA about Samantha Power. And we had a blog on it. It was actually in June of 2019. We put a blog up at aclj.org, so about a little less than a year ago. It said over the last 2 years, we've all seen, we've all seen the reports of the unprecedented unmasking of U.S. citizens by senior Obama officials. So think about that. Almost 2 years ago, this blog was up at the ACLJ. Think we haven't been on this, folks? We've been on it. That's what it takes, aclj.org. And the media has reported that among other Obama administration officials, former ambassador to the UN, Samantha Power, made numerous requests seeking the unmasking of names and other info about members of the Trump campaign team whose communications had been incidentally caught up in intelligence surveillance efforts. Power's requests, reported to number, remember, in the hundreds, occurred mostly in the final days of the Obama administration, that is, between the election of President Trump in November and his inauguration January 2017. Now, the media didn't like to focus on what we got in one of our FOIA reports, was what was behind Samantha Power. What was the idea here? Well, the evidence we were able to obtain through the NSA and State Department, we're still in court over these, but it shows email chains to and between Samantha Power and her top advisor, Nicholas Steinberg, just 3 days after the election of President Trump, in which she actively discusses, quote, an idea to seek maximum amplification of her politically biased message. So her advisor raises the idea of going to a vessel to channel some post-Trump messages about who we are. Minutes later, Powell responds, we need to move out on a 60 Minutes idea to seek maximum amplification. I can write Charlie or Bill Owens if he's still there. So after a brief discussion ensured over who would reach out, later that evening, Steinberg sent Power a draft pitch email for her to send to 60 Minutes. That draft is completely redacted. But he then suggests the hook being, and this is unshadowed, I mean unredacted, the hook should be, in another email, the foreshadowing that Trump and company may try to undo all of what we've done. So think about that. It's very political. They're still in office. President Trump is not yet even in office, and her unmasking requests begin ramping up and ramping up. She then shoots off the email to the executive editor of 60 Minutes, quote, we're still reeling here, as you might imagine. My mission to the UN is as a cabinet agency under President Obama, so she was a member of the cabinet, but will be demoted to something very different in January. Notwithstanding this, Tuesday's results, think about this, folks, have given us an even greater sense of urgency to get our work done in our last few months. 70 good long days left. Now, Than, we know some of that work was to undermine the state of Israel. Right off the bat, the Obama administration not facing another election. The elections were already over for the for congressional races too, and they undermined Israel at the United Nations with their decision to not veto, but just to, abstain on a UN Security Council vote condemning Israel.
Yeah, it was the same as walking away from them, Jordan, as you know, because it had been a U.S. veto historically that had kept the Security Council from passing that resolution. And under Ambassador Power's watch and President Obama's watch, the United States walked away from that in the waning days of the administration. Fortunately, this administration has put it back in place. But, Jordan, as terrible as that decision was, at least it was in the core of Ambassador Power's duties and responsibilities, because all of what you're talking about, Jordan, has nothing to do with being U.N. ambassador. And you walked through some of that email timeline.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, some of those exchanges between her deputy Steinberg were on December 14th. That was the day, Jordan, that she made two of the unmasking requests.
Yep.
And if you continue going through the timeline, really, she kept going back to the unmasking request to bolster not her official job, Jordan, but to bolster what had become her unofficial job down the stretch, and that was undermining the next administration.
Yeah. I mean, in the next email, She writes again to the executive editor. It's the same email. So she writes this to the executive editor of 60 Minutes for CBS. She talks about her special status she had under President Obama as a cabinet member, one we know now that came with vast unmasking authority. And she stated, quote, "I was also being informed that the job of U.S. ambassador to the U.N. will be downgraded by the Trump administration to non-cabinet level. That's typical of Republican administrations, but we have never had so many of our core interests embedded here." I'll go to Andy on that, too. Never had so many of our core interests embedded here at the United Nations. Andy, that is a very telling sentence because it just tells you how embedded these government actors were, even when you talk about global matters like the UN and international relations, that was their top concern with the Obama administration, not our country, not the healthcare in America, even though they like to talk about that a lot. Their top concerns, at least in her mind, because she was made a member of a cabinet, was at the UN and their core issues. And it's a no wonder they wanted to disrupt all of the international work that this incoming administration could do by first disrupting a relationship with Russia.
Well, that's exactly right, Jordan. What they had is an agenda. An agenda was to scramble and to destroy the Trump administration from the very beginning, from the earliest days of the new president. And they used the power of unmasking, which they had, the power to open all this intelligence signal information to all these agencies, to do everything they can to undermine the new president's administration and to keep in lockstep with what President Obama, the emperor, had decreed. And this, in the last days of a dying and moribund administration, was the insistence that their agenda be preserved. And they were scrambling at the end to do anything they could to unravel what the new president was about to do and what he had announced was his program and his plan. And that includes the support of Israel. And so they started this process of unmasking. And I keep thinking what Than said earlier. She said to Congress that she didn't have any recollection of unmasking, and yet she made, what was it, 7 requests for unmasking? And she said she didn't know. Somebody better look into perjury before the Congress in connection with what the then ambassador to the UN was saying when she couldn't make a recollection of having done all that. That's a bunch of garbage.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, folks, we are covering all this. We're going to start taking your phone calls when we come back from the break. I mean, she made 7, Than, just on Michael Flynn, 7 unmasked requests that we know about with Michael Flynn, but hundreds in total is what was reported by the media. She was the number one, it looks like, unmasker in the Obama administration, and it still doesn't make sense, even with her cabinet-level position, that the UN ambassador was the number one unmasker, not the CIA director, not the NSA director, but our UN ambassador.
Jordan, I'd just rhetorically ask you, if you had made hundreds of unmasking requests in the final year of the administration, and it was more than that down the stretch, and 7 of Michael Flynn alone, more than 1 per day, if Congress asked you if you remembered if something you had done more than once every single day over the last year, do you think you'd have had recollection of that, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, folks, again, 1-800-684-3110. A lot of people forgetting things, a lot of people being very defensive. I think that's good news. Remember, it's not just the Flynn case that's happening. We've got Durham is one of 2 U.S. attorneys looking at all this now, and Attorney General Barr said their role's been expanded. Bring into this and more in our next half hour coming up on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about the Flynn matter. Take a listen to this. Ben Rhodes, senior advisor to President Obama when it came to national security issues, and a top aide to Susan Rice as well. Take a listen to his answers. This is an interview he did back in 2019. Take a listen, Byte 33.
DOJ is going to investigate, they're already investigating the origins of the Russia probe during the Obama years. Do you think they're going to find anything?
No.
With their investigation?
No. Look, I can't be clear enough about this. We didn't even know that there was an FBI investigation of Trump. I didn't. President Obama didn't. Like, we actually abided by the firewalls between. If there were any investigations that took place, those decisions were made in the Justice Department, in the FBI, not in the White House.
First of all, let me go to Andy right off the bat on that. No, I can't be clear. We didn't know anything about FBI investigation of President Trump. He uses really pretty words there because he didn't say Flynn. He didn't say Trump officials. He wanted to make it about President Trump specifically, though, again, you can question that now, too, as well, because of how Russiagate expanded and how Crossfire Razor on Flynn became Crossfire Hurricane, Andy. But again, these actors at the Obama administration, they really thought they could get away with this, that no one would ever put these pieces of the puzzle together. And he claims that, let me be clear, we didn't know that there was an FBI investigation of Trump. Now, technically, that part was beginning a little later, but they were already going after Trump's top team members. So it's like, how do you define? And they're always been careful about this, that Obama team, but they're starting to be totally exposed, Andy. It's like, how do you define what's an investigation of Trump when the president of the United States is telling his DOJ officials about investigating the incoming national security advisor that President Trump has chosen?
Yeah, Jordan, this is just the typical Obama administration playing loose and fast with words and playing semantics and trying to get you to think, well, no, we didn't know anything about an investigation. It's not going to come out. But they thought because they had been protected all this time by people such as Eric Holder and subsequently Loretta Lynch, that they were going to continue to be protected by the deep state, committed, liberal bureaucrats that were embedded in the State Department, in the Justice Department, and elsewhere. So they had good reason for saying no, no, no. They had been protected all along. They thought those documents would never surface, one reason or another, maybe destroyed, maybe otherwise ditched in some fashion. So they had the audacity and temerity to make statements such as they made. They had been protected all along. Why shouldn't they continue to feel that way? And in fact, they did. Regardless of who was coming in as president, they had this incredible arrogance and pride that they continued toward the last days of the administration in those massive unmasking requests. It's just a matter of pride and arrogance.
You know, folks, what we're doing is we're doing a deep dive back into what we found out in 2018 and 2019 through our legal work, so 2 years ago or more, and putting it together with all this that relates to Michael Flynn. Than, I'm holding in my hands James Clapper signing off saying that we have carried out the Executive Order 12333. It is signed by James Clapper on January 11th of 2017. I mean, literally, they had 9 days left in the administration, and they were changing how intel would be distributed amongst all these bureaucrats even.
That was one of the days, Jordan, that Ambassador Power made one of her 7 unmasking requests of General Flynn. I don't think that's a coincidence. I would also tell you, Ben Rhodes got caught, Jordan, because President Obama didn't keep James Comey and Sally Yates back to brief him about an issue. He kept them back so he could brief them about the investigation he knew about. Ben Rhodes, Jordan, that was a lie.
Wouldn't you want to know? I mean, Joe Biden, he gets mentioned here once. He's a vice president, puts in the last unmasking request of Flynn that's reported. Was this typical of Joe Biden? Was he another one like Samantha Power? Or was this like one of a handful? Or was this the only time he put in an unmasking request? Wouldn't that be good to know? U.S. Senate, U.S. House, be good to know that. We'll be...
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, so we're going to go right to the phones. We are waiting for the president. He's not started his remarks yet. When he does, if he does that while we're on the air, we'll cut to that live. If not, we'll cover it on Monday's broadcast. And, of course, you follow us on our social media, Facebook, ACLJ, of course, is a website with great resources. A lot of the information we're going through today was posted to ACLJ, like back in over the last couple of years. And we didn't connect it to Michael Flynn directly, but now we're able to because of that work that we did and the timeline that came out with who was doing the unmasking and when, along with the testimony that was released finally by the House Intel Committee that Adam Schiff's hand was kind of forced to release that testimony by a lot of Obama officials. So you put those three elements together, the ACLJ's FOIA work on why the Obama administration changed the intel rules and 8 days before they left, or 9 days before they left, before President Trump was sworn into office, 9 days before he was taking the oath, say, had 8 days left. And why did they change the way intelligence was distributed? That was our initial FOIA, and now you can match it up with the timeline of all of the Flynn unmasking and the work that was being done. Then you can also match it with the testimony that was given under oath to the House Intel Committee. I'm going to go right to the phone. So people have good questions about this and about Michael Flynn's case. I'm glad we've got Andy with us still joining us too. James in California on line two. James, thanks for holding on. I wanted to get to your question when we had a kind of a fresh segment to get to so we could answer it for you.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, what does unmasking mean and what is an amicus brief?
Okay, so two separate issues. Let me do the unmasking one. This is very easy. So the U.S., under our national security laws, is able to listen in on foreign conversations and conversations with foreign governments that have, if it's crossing over internationally. And that's part of, again, those laws that get debated, like the FISA court. But to protect Americans, anytime someone who is a subject of one of those phone taps, I know that they don't use that kind of technology anymore, but phone taps, basically, anytime an American is heard on those calls, they are masked. That means their name is not disclosed in the transcript. So it would say like American one or U.S. person one. And you have to then, if you'd want to know who that person was and you have some reason where you think that you need to know because that person was engaged in something wrong, you could put in a request to get their name. So the info is there, but the government actually is supposed to be protecting Americans. So, Andy, that's unmasking in a very simple way. Amicus briefs are something we do, Andy, a lot at the American Center for Law and Justice. in civil cases, especially, and sometimes at the district court level, but oftentimes at the circuit court and U.S. Supreme Court, where you see a lot of this get more active at the appeals court levels. But sometimes we do get involved in the district court as with amicus briefs as well. These are called friend of the court briefs. What's interesting here is that judges, usually in criminal cases, even federal courts, are not really interested in getting opinions from outside groups, organizations, or attorneys who aren't directly involved in the criminal case.
An amicus brief simply is Latin for friend of the court. They are used in civil cases. I have never seen one in a criminal case. And all it says is, we who are the amici, the friends of the court, are neutral with respect to the decision in the case, but we want to express our opinion as to how we think the court should rule based upon, we're not parties, but based upon the law. We'd like to express an opinion on what the state of the law is and how we believe the court should rule. But that's done in civil cases. We file those from the American Center for Law and Justice all the time, in which we assert the position, for example, of pro-life and advocacy in that area. And it's simply a party who wants the court to get a fresh perspective different from those who are the actual litigants in the case. But I have never, ever seen an amicus brief solicited by a judge or by anybody else in a criminal case. A criminal case is between the government and the state and the defendant, period.
All right. President Trump is speaking now. He's with Dr. Fauci on stage. Just to paint the picture for you, Dr. Fauci is in a mask. Take a listen. This is President Trump.
An amazing year next year. We're going to have a great transition into the fourth quarter. As of this morning, almost every state has taken steps to begin reopening, and the American people are doing an extraordinary job of continuing to take precautions while at the same time wanting to start, and they will be starting to resume, their American way of life. We will be reigniting our economic engines. We're going to be taking care of our most vulnerable, which are our senior citizens and some others. We're going to be working very, very hard on our senior citizens and our nursing homes and various communities to support those that are struggling in this very difficult time. Others don't have the same kind of struggle. For example, today, Secretary Perdue, together with Ivanka Trump, launched the Farmers and Families Food Box program, which will provide $3 billion to help small farmers. And it'll be helping farmers, ranchers, but it'll be bringing food to some of the food lines and some of the food kitchens that you've been seeing on television. And I said, why aren't we doing that? We have all of this tremendous food produced by our farmers and our ranchers. And so we're going to be buying $3 billion worth of that food. Great for everybody, our farmers, our ranchers, and the people that need great food. A key feature of our reopening plan is the largest and most ambitious testing system in the world, by far. America is now conducting close to 350,000 tests per day, an unthinkable number just a short while ago.
We're going to get, we've got a whole team here who can monitor this. We're going to monitor when the president gets to this, the more breaking news. And so we'll monitor it. We can get it right to you when that happens, and we'll go right to it when it happens. I want to continue to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110 on the Flynn case. Let's go to Nancy in California on line 3. Nancy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, fellas. I'm wondering, do you think that Judge Sullivan is doing this to Flynn so that he'll have like some little charge to justify the case, and that would then prevent him from being able to sue the government for millions for like wrongful prosecution or whatever?
I don't think Andy, the judge, is the one who's going to be able to decide that in this matter. I think this is nothing good. I think it's just delaying justice for Mike Flynn, who will ultimately see justice here. What I do think this is happening, but I get your idea, Nancy, is that this judge is trying to make it look like more legitimate. But Andy, it's the Department of Justice, so long as it's this Department of Justice, by the way. We do have an election coming up in November, so there is a timeliness to this matter. But under this Department of Justice, they have admitted wrongdoing, Andy, and so it's not up to this judge to decide that part if this were to go to a civil case where Michael Flynn was seeking relief for the wrongdoing already admitted by the Department of Justice.
That's right. The Department of Justice has taken a first look at the Flynn case under Attorney General Barr and has made a decision based upon a motion that was filed by Flynn's lawyer to vacate his plea. The defendant made a motion, and the government responded. And the government responded by saying, "You're right. This prosecution should not have been brought, and we move, Judge, for you to dismiss it under Rule 28 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. Do your duty and dismiss the case. We are not going to prosecute it. We are the executive branch of government, and we have the right to do that." Judge Sullivan had, in my view, one alternative, and that is either two alternatives. You either grant the government's motion and dismiss the case along with the concurrence of the defendant in the case, or you go ahead and sentence the man.
All right, so
and he did, and he has done neither.
All right, we're still monitoring President Trump as well, and this remarks about the first. He's talking about how first actions on a vaccine. This is interesting news. I mean, Than, I just a quick commentary on this. We'll get back to the Flynn calls. And by the way, another segment coming up on Michael Flynn, 1-800-684-3110. He said, quote, on vaccine, "I think we'll have some very interesting things to report in the not-so-distant future. But the first actions on a vaccine began in January 11th, which undercuts a lot of the narrative by the left that this was an administration that was caught off guard and hasn't been focused."
Yeah, I think they've been focused on this for a while, Jordan. I think they've been working with other countries. There's been allusions to that from the president, the vice president, and others. But again, I think what's relevant today, Jordan, is the putting the public's attention back on this because it comes at the same time that so much of America is reopening. Jordan, I think much of the public, I would put myself in this boat, we want to hear the assurance that the United States is working towards this because if you're going to put yourself in potential situations where you are going to be exposed, the ability to choose a vaccine, Jordan, that's going to be a pivotal component in making sure that reopening really emerges successfully.
And again, as Than said, it's the ability to choose to have a vaccine. And again, in our country, there's people that are against vaccines. I'm not going to get into that debate on here. You could have your own debates. They're having it on their Facebook page right now as it speaks. But listen, the idea is that if it's available and the majority of the country then ends up, utilizing that vaccine, you're going to be able to see an opening up, not without any kind of, concerns, and getting back to kind of where we were, then preparing for the future as well in a different way, knowing that, we don't want this to happen again. How do we prevent this from happening again? 1-800-684-3110. We'll get more into Michael Flynn as well. We come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
So the president did say during his remarks he believes that there will be a vaccine at least, you know, by the end of the year. And we're waiting to see if we get any more specifics. And then we're you know, this may still be going on while we're off the air today. So of course we can discuss on Monday if there's more info that comes out. Sometimes White House releases more information after the initial remarks by the president. We will see. So, but he's talking about again a lot of the process of a vaccine, but also process of treating COVID-19 and treatments that are available as well. I want to get back to your phones on the Flynn matter, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. When we have the sound from President Trump, I'll play that for you so you can hear it in the president's own words. Let's go to Sharon in Oregon on line 4. Sharon, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is Judge Sullivan sovereign? Who's providing oversight for him? And isn't he just setting himself up for an appeal on any decision?
Well, I mean, I'll go to Andy on this. I mean, Andy, this is obviously it is dragging this situation out. There's also an interesting timeline here because the Department of Justice could significantly change come next January. I mean, it depends on the outcome of an election. A lot of people are just assuming President Trump will win. I think that's very dangerous always in elections. But if something else were to happen, if it was a President Biden or somebody else, there's going to be a different AG there, and they could decide, we don't like the decision that Attorney General Barr made. So I also think he's playing with a very dangerous timeline with Mike Flynn.
Well, I think so. And to answer the caller's question directly, Judge Sullivan is not the sovereign in the case. We don't have sovereigns. We have a republic. We don't have a monarchy in this country. And the judges are supposed to rule on motions before them, not come in and take opinion polls on how they should rule by appointing amici in criminal cases to come and give them. Let me have your opinion of the case. I'd like to hear what you have to say. I don't agree with terminating a prosecution. That's not your decision, Judge Sullivan. You are in the judicial branch of government. The executive has made, which prosecutes, has made a decision. Stay out of being a prosecutor, stay being a judge. And yes, there are appellate remedies, which I'm sure the Justice Department is looking into if this judge continues in this unhinged fashion.
It's interesting. President Trump just said, you know, the federal government's going to invest in manufacturing of all the top vaccine candidates. So I guess one thing you could take away from this press conference is that there's a number of these vaccines that are being, I think they said 14 different top that are showing promise. So the federal government's going to invest to speed that process up and then distribute them to all Americans as quickly as possible who want them. Again, I would add that. I think it's this is something probably to get into. Listen to the president in his own words. I want you to hear this because it's happening while we're on the air.
It's called Operation Warp Speed. That means big and it means fast. A massive scientific, industrial, and logistical endeavor unlike anything our country has seen since the Manhattan Project. Its objective is to finish developing and then to manufacture and distribute a proven coronavirus vaccine as fast as possible. Again, we'd love to see if we could do it prior to the end of the year.
So prior to the end of the year is what the president's talking about. So that could be fall. That could be a little bit into winter. I mean, that but what you're talking about is again, by the end of the year. And I think that is very hopeful because that is where you can kind of pin things on being able to, if things go well, totally reopen. Interesting question, Andy, that came in through Facebook, and I just saw it as it was running through the Facebook comments, but is there anything that can be done to stop Judge Sullivan? I know that there's discussions attorneys are having that are not even involved in the case about different motions you can file, and is it a writ of mandamus? Is it an interlocutory appeal? Someone asked about, is there anything that can be done to even question the judge's decision here? And I think right now that's being top legal minds are looking at that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I don't have the answer to that question, but I'm sure people at the Justice Department and the Defense Counsel's office are looking seriously at whether the order that he entered is appealable. I don't think it's appealable because it's not a final order, and they have to be final in order to be appealable. But there could be writs that we call a writ of mandamus to order the judge to do his job, and that is sentence the defendant or rule on the motion that the District of Columbia Court of Appeals might ultimately be approached to do. So there are items, I'm sure, that good and competent legal scholars are looking into to see what this runaway judge, and that's really what he is, has done, and whether it can continue to stand.
All right, let's go back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Amanda in Virginia, interesting question, too, on line five. Amanda, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you. My question was, what are general plans options with the judge dropping the charges like he should versus President Trump pardoning him?
Well, I mean, a pardon, it means you were guilty and you've received this special power the president has to pardon you. And I'm not saying, listen, that's not a small power. It's a huge power the president have. And the presidents take, they use it and they utilize it. And I think if Mike Flynn, it looks like that, like, if that wasn't the case here, that may be likely. But that means that he was never really fully cleared, Andy. I think that's the difference. Pardon means one thing. It means you might have been guilty. You might have even served time in prison. That hasn't been the case for Mike Flynn. But that you're getting this special gift that the president has to bestow upon individuals who he feels like have either served their time or were mistreated by the sentence they received. And so it's a way to correct wrongs. But it is not it doesn't give you that full sense of being totally vindicated. And I think that's what the Department of Justice was saying, because they were saying, we shouldn't even prosecuted you. It was our fault.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in your analysis. A pardon is from Roman law. It's part of Roman law. It was the right of the emperor to pardon somebody who had committed a wrong. Michael Flynn says, I didn't commit a wrong. I don't want a pardon. I want this prosecution to end, and the Justice Department is saying the right thing. It should end. It should not continue.
All right, let's take final call of the day. Lisa in Pennsylvania. Thanks for holding on, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you for making this clear and concise, because it got very confusing with all the information with General Flynn's case.
Yeah.
I have a question. Does this set a precedence for lower criminal case judges that they can just turn around and do this for their cases as well?
I mean, Lisa, this violates, and Andy, just quickly, we only got a minute left, it violates this judge's own precedent. I mean, this judge is 26 times before has denied people filing any kind of amicus in his trial court when it comes to criminal cases, and yet, so it's violating his own precedent. I think this is so outside the norm, Andy, that this is not going to be come normal, but it's always dangerous that it sets a new standard for the politicizing of criminal cases.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. It gives other judges who may be runaway judges the idea, well, if Judge Sullivan can do it and get away with it, maybe I can too.
That's the dangerous part, is when we're talking about criminal cases and them being politicized, not trusting the Department of Justice, the judge not trusting the Department of Justice, bringing in someone who doesn't like the current president to argue against the Department of Justice. Is the prosecutor saying we shouldn't have done this? This was prosecutorial misconduct. Wrong for us to do this. Folks, we'll have a lot more for you next week on Jay Sekulow Live. Check out ACLJ.org. Support the work of the ACLJ. Donate online at ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you next week.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.